Accession number 16729, William Ridley, reel 21.
Mr. Ridley, reel 21. You're in hospital in Cairo, Mr. Ridley. What memories have you got of that hospital?
Well, the memories that I've got of the hospital is we were a mixed bunch. I was next to an Australian, and then there was me, and then there was about four coloured lads from the, I think it was one of the Northwest Frontier Regiments or something like that. And the one had his, one had leg off and the other one was badly scattered with shrapnel. But this one particularly was next to me, and we used to have, at night time, the ward, all the lights off, and had a pilot light in the middle of the ward, and it was surrounded by a green screen. And this guy next to me, who was really completely black, the word black is, you know, he wasn't brown or anything like that, he was black. And he used to lie with his head on my locker, and he used to go to sleep with his eyes open. And all I could see was the whites of his eyes, and the green from the screen. And I woke up one night, and I looked across, and here was these two green eyes looking at me out of the darkness. And if I could have got out of bed, I would have been away, but unfortunately I couldn't. And he also had a very bad habit of spitting behind the bed, which wasn't very... I was a bit frightened in case he missed his mark, like, you know. But why I tell you that was the culmination of it was that Her Majesty, the matron was coming round on an inspection. And in those days, the matron was God. And I think she held the rank of a lieutenant colonel, I think, something like that. And she used to come down in all her regal splendour with her entourage. And she'd come down, "Good morning, good morning, good morning." And just as she was passing my bed, the coloured lad next door to me brought one right up from the soles of his feet and put it right across her, spat right across her bows, and it plonked in front of her. And the matron turned the same colour as her cloak, and Peter hastily could retreat. And within about a half an hour to an hour, that coloured lad had someone to talk to him in his own language and tell him not to spit.
Were there other wounded coming in during the course of your time there?
Not noticeable, but as far as I was concerned, the ward was really full. But afterwards, when just before the Al-Alamein started, the attack went in. They cleared all the wards out, and they put us into like Nissen huts on the grounds of the hospital. I was never really well enough to go traipsing around in there, but in the hospital grounds and things like that. I cannot remember ever being going round, walking round, but I remember once we got an invitation from the French embassy, and they invited us, I think there was about 10 of us, I think a dozen of us, the French embassy invited us to go to the sporting club. Oh, I forget now, was it the Madeira or the Gazeera Sporting Club? And the trip was great, you know, food and what have you. And we were surrounded by officers and all this business. And of course, we picked a table that was near the swimming pool. And the brilliant, I assume they were officers. I couldn't say whether they were officers or not, but it was an officer's sporting club. And we sat beside the edge of the pool, and a number of the officers, we couldn't tell because they were, naturally, they were in bathing costumes. And they were deliberately jumping into the pool and as near as they could to the side of the pool, so the splash was as we sat in the hospital blues, like, you know. And whether they were British or Australian or French, I don't know, but they weren't very pleased that we were there. And as we come out, there was a table with full of officers' caps on with red bands round. And somehow or another, they were swept into the swimming pool. I wouldn't say who it was that done it, mind, but they were floating around in the Gazeera Sporting Club's swimming pool. Often wonder whose they were.
But were you able to hear anything about what had happened to the battalion since you left it?
Just as I said, the officer that came in, he was a doctor actually, and when in the ward. He came in and he said, I'll come back to you. And he did come back to me. And it was then that he told us the state of what the battalion was like, you know. And he also told us that he was aware that one of our lads had been recommended for a VC. And I says, well, what'd they call him like? And he says, I just can't remember. He says it was Wake something, Wake Hall or Wake something. I says, wasn't Wakenshaw, was it? He says, yes, it was. And that was the first time I heard that Wakenshaw won the VC, or been recommended for the VC at that time. And it astounded me. Like,
you say you were astounded, in what way? He was the last one you thought might
yeah,
be one?
Yeah, it was a guy that, maybe I can explain it this way. When we were in England, they decided to form a reserve battalion, a reserve company, and each company had to supply either half a dozen or a dozen, whatever it was, of the company. And naturally what happened was that the company commanders got rid of some of the lads that they didn't want, you know, and amongst them was Wakenshaw, you know. And I always remember I was on an exercise with them, and I remember one officer, he told us to get our ground sheets out of our pack, and Wakenshaw didn't have them in his pack, which he should have had, like, you know. And this officer turned around, he says, Wakenshaw, he says, if you live till you're 100, he says, I'll never meet a soldier of you. And I thought to myself, well, I wonder what that officer thought of after when he won the VC, like.
You had a reputation, did you, of being awkward, Wakenshaw?
I wouldn't say awkward, but he was a lad that was always... I was surprised that he was in the anti-tank, you know? I didn't know he was in the anti-tank, but he was one of the lads that was always doing menial jobs, like, you know, sort of thing. I didn't know him personally, like, you know, But they always seem to be doing, you know, getting menial jobs in the cookhouse and them sort of things, like, you know. But I didn't know him personally.
What happened next to you?
Well, we went, after Cairo, we weren't there a great length of time. I cannot remember how long we were there. But I know I was, I carried a chalk on my arm for quite a while, to actually till I got to South Africa. We went from...
Was that your striped chalk?
No, the plaster, you know. The plaster, I should have said. And we went from there to down to Suez and then down the canal, and we joined the Orduna in is it Chufik, and we joined the Orduna, and I was on I got on board, and lo and behold, one of the battalion lads came up to me, and you know, we're pleased to see each other. I don't know. At the moment, I just can't remember his name, and he's a bit important in the story as well. But we were standing on the at the rail of the ship, and they were bringing the wounded that couldn't walk in like big boxes that was hooked onto at each corner and lifted onto the ship that way. And this one lad was had his hands over his eyes to cover the sun blazing down on him. And I said to this friend of mine, I says, look, I says, that's Joe Clark. And I had been with Joe when he was blown up in the desert, and he'd lost his leg. Anyway, this friend of mine dashed away, and I dashed away, and we went down into the naffy part, and we got about 5 or 6 pound bars of chocolate to give to Joe when he come up. And by the time Joe come up, the chocolate was nearly running away. But anyway, it was a smashing to meet them again. And we went down to South Africa, and of course we all got split up again. I ended up in Oraibi. I don't know where Joe and the other lad went to, but I ended up in Oraibi Hospital in Pietermaritzburg.
And what was the reception like at that hospital?
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, there were South Africans, and run by South Africans, and I mean, the track were like, I mean, we went into the place, and there was flowers on the side of your bed with bowls of fruit and everything sort of thing, and I mean, it was never known anything like it, to be quite honest, you know. I mean, the reception was absolutely fantastic, and of course the doctor eventually come round, and I'd had my plaster taken off, like, and I asked the doctor, I says, how long would I lived with the wound I had, like, I says, it was before I got attention. He says, well, he says, oh, I think I would have given you about 4 minutes. When I told him that I hadn't been attended to for well over 15 quarter of an hour, he says, you must have done something, or he says, you would have been dead. And when I told him that I put the heel of my hand in my wound, he says, that's all you needed, you know. And but it was, we had an excellent day, and the people used to come and collect us and take us to cinemas and plays and take us out to tea and all these wonderful things. Now, I'd been away one time with a party, and when I got back, the sister come up and he says, "Let's go to Ridley." I says, "Yes." He says, "There's a gentleman being to see you," and I asked him his name, like, and the name didn't mean anything at all. And he says, but anyway, he says, they're coming back. And they did come back. And it turned out to be the mother of Mr. and Mrs. Evans, who I'd met in Durban when I'd come out. And they told us, they rang our mum and dad. And Shaws, they call them, Mr. and Mrs. Shaw. And they came out and used to take me out to dinner. I remember one time they said they were going through to Durban to see Mrs. and Mrs. Evans, and they asked if I would like to go. I said, oh great, you know. So picked us up on the Friday before this, we went away on the Saturday. And on the Friday he took us all over Maritzburg. And he took me into a shore and into a big posh hotel for dinner, and sat us down in this place, and the place set for us. And there was more knives and forks and spoons and whatever you, stretching outward from me place that I had ever seen in our house for all my life, like, you know. And I did know that my mum had been in service, and I did know that when you had things like that, you started on the outside of the knives and forks. But with only having one hand, it didn't really matter, like, you know, because I was using a spoon at the time. And we did go to Durban, back to Durban, and I met Mr. and Mrs. Evans again. Unfortunately, I lost them after I left South Africa.
The hospital itself, was it a strictly disciplined hospital?
No, it was a civvy hospital. The only discipline you got was if you come across an odd officer. I remember once we were coming. Of course, we were in blues, you know, and like linen blues, weren't the big thick stuff that you had in England. But we're in linen blues, and it was reasonably, they used to fasten with a loose strap round your waist, like, you know. And I remember we coming out of the hospital one day, and there's always a snotty subaltern knocking around, like, you know. And he went up to one of the lads and he says, soldier, get your hand out your pockets. And this lad says, I'm sorry, sir. He says, I haven't got my hand in my pocket. He says, I'm telling you to get your hand out your pocket. He says, my hand's not in my pocket. He says, do you want me to book you for insubordination? He says, I'm not being insubordinate, sir. He says, I've told you to take your hand out your pocket. And he says, I've told you, sir, my hand's not in my pocket. So he took his hand, took his arm out, and there was no hand on the end of his arm. And he was an RA lad who had went up to Al Alamein, dropped the 25 pounders in, spread the thing out, shell fell, and he was back in, on the way with minus his hand, within a half an hour of being in, gone into action. And I never saw such a lovely look on that officer's face when he pinned his hand out, you know.
Was it a British or a South African officer?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I would doubt it was a South African officer, because they didn't have anything much to do with it.
You usually find some British officers were that tight.
Yeah, they were a bit, particularly them that was on the way up, or they hadn't seen much, like, you know. And we could get away with a lot with being in blues. I mean, you could. I remember a sergeant, after I came back, I was in uniform by this time, and we were on parade at Wharton Camp, and he started to rail at me because twice he railed at me. One was that I wasn't saluting properly, and the other one that I was standing touching with my arm and wasn't straight by me seams of his trousers, and he started pulling at my arm to get my arm down in line with the seam of my trousers. And I says, sir, I says, if you can get that straightened, I says, you'll do better than about a half a dozen surgeons that's been trying to do it for the last 3 or 4 months, like, you know. But them sort of things, and the same guy pulled us for not saluting the officer properly. And at that time, I could hardly get my hand above my shoulder, like, you know. But they were isolated incidents. I mean, normally there was no problems, like, you know.
What treatment were you getting for your arm?
No, nothing then.
Not by South Africa.
You were just, you were on the way, you were on transit, that's all. You were there. Few weeks, like, you know, and enjoying the sunshine. I think it was more or less a recuperation, like, you know, because we'd had a bit of a rough time, like, and it was like being in heaven, you know. I mean, it was fantastic place, wonderful people, and I mean the globe, you know. I mean, the apples and oranges and bananas and all sorts of stuff, like, you know, and they treat you with the, you know, great. The only thing that we used to play war with was that we used to fraternise with the coloured lads, you know, and we used to talk to the coloured lads, and that used to upset them a little bit, like, you know.
What jobs had the coloured people?
Oh, anything menial, anything, and just rubbish, that's all. Yeah, an incident that I saw myself was there was a plumber, there was a tap. Like a bust, and it was a standpipe sort of thing, like, you know. And the plumber, the old coloured lad, come trundling up in some barra or something with the tools, like, you know. And the plumber comes up in a big flashy car, and this coloured lad handed him his overalls, and he hadn't put the overalls on, and he mended the standpipe, like, and he just dropped his overalls and his tools and everything, climbed back into the car in a way, and the coloured lad had to clear up and everything. And I just thought to myself, strange, you know, how it was. I mean, I was pretty young, like, and I didn't think it was really right, like, you know. I saw one or two things like that in South Africa. So I wasn't waiting for the bus. I was standing at the bus stop, and the bus pulled up, and there was a number of white people, and of course the black people couldn't get on there before the white people, and even then they were only allowed the two back seats in the upstairs on the thing, and if the bus was full and a white person come in, they had to get off and didn't know where they were. Anyway, this particular time there was there was coloured lad standing, and he had his hand. It was an ordinary bus that we used to use in England, with a platform at the back, like, you know. And this coloured lad was standing with his hand on the rail, waiting. Must wait till the white people got on, and he did get all of them got on, and this black lad just put his foot on the thing, pulled himself onto the train. And unbeknown to him, there was a white woman coming behind him, and he come behind him, and he was on the platform before, and he didn't see her. I mean, there was no way he could see her, and there was a 6 foot South African soldier standing, and he hit him full in the face with his fist. He flew off the bus, crashed against the wall, and just slid down the wall, and the bus pulled away and knocked him, you know. And I thought to myself, not right somewhere, you know. And that was the only fault I found there. And of course the boys didn't like you. The boys used to spit at you sometimes. Not all of them, but sometimes they did.
So was the hospital manned by what you might call prior British, but now South Africans?
There were some South Africans in, like, you know, like, but they had no problems there. They were brilliantly, like, you know. We didn't matter anything. We're still disciplined, like, you know. I mean, I got disciplined for getting into a fight, like, you know, again.
How did that come about?
Well, there was one, a Cockney lad, and he must have been going out with taking his nurse out, like, you know. And
at this time I only had, my arm was pretty useless. Well, it was useless. And he had an arm wound. He had a bullet through the wrist, and I had pressed his hand up and fitted into a leather. It just looked like the top end of a riding boot, laced up, and at the wrist where there was a Y, metal Y that forced the hand back into this leather laced up thing that went right up to his elbow, and he'd been going out with us, and she dropped him and he was giving her a hard time, you see. So I told him, I says that's no way to speak to anybody, you know. And he said, and he turned on me and he says what are you going to do about it? So I've got a real thing about me, I always like to get the first one on. So I hit him, and ensued in a bit of a, I hit him and he went over the bed and knocked oranges and apples and the daffodils and whatever all over the place, and we got stuck into each other, you know, and we got pegged, you know. And before we got put in on the, well, it wasn't on a charge, they didn't charge, but they were disciplined, and I said whatever I would do, I says, don't mention the nurse, I said, because if you do, I says, she'll take the whole racket for what we've done. And sure enough, the lad was good to his word, and we never meant. And we got our knuckles wrapped, and that was all. They couldn't do much with it, you know.
Was fraternising with the nurses frowned upon?
Well, we're frowned upon or not. I mean, to fraternise with them, I could tell you another story, but I'm not. Yes, they did fraternise, and I mean, there were a lot of young, very handsome lads there, you know, apart from me.
When did you leave this hospital?
Oh, God, I don't know. I must have been about 2 or 3 months. I think we were, and we could be. Sent back on a New Zealand ship, I think she was.
Was it a hospital ship?
No, it was a trooper coming home. They brought a lot of people from India, you know, married people, you know, wives and children from India, you know. And there was a lot of ex-service. I remember there was a sergeant major that had been dropped to and court-martialed for something or another. He was from regimental sergeant major down to private, and of course he didn't have a very happy trip home, you know, when they got the noise of being an ex-sergeant major. And there was a number of Scotch lads coming back, the regulars, and oh dear me, oh, there was trouble. There was a lad there who, one of the wounded lads, and he got into a card game with this regiment the sergeant major was in, and some of the jocks, and they were playing nine card brag, and this young soldier he won, you know, and the ex sergeant major started disputing, you know. And it was something about nine card brag, and there was a floating card and whatever, and he was making his own rules anyway. The young lad lost the pot, and it was a lot of money in it at the time, you know. And he lost it, and this sergeant major won it, you see. And he used to do a bit on the piano, this sergeant major. And I remember this night he come out, just after this incident, he was up on the stage and he was playing Two Lovely Black Eyes, you know. The next time I saw him, he did. He had Two Lovely Black Eyes. The jocks had gotten a hold of him, you know, belted him.
And it was mayhem. Oh, it was mayhem. It was 3 o'clock in the morning and they were scrapping and they were fighting each other, you know.
Not with that, no,
but he was amongst, he got some of the body, but the jocks was, they'd had a few, you know. And
alcohol and
one thing had started another thing, and of course all the old things that had built up over the years come out, like, you know. And there was 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, we were enjoying it, like, we were just sitting on the things, and they were scrapping away, like, you know. And nobody tried to stop them,